But rather than address what people wanted or find a way to get people interested in them, they just eliminated what they wanted, which is good and bad. I mean, whatever. If you care about the consumer's interests, it's bad. But if you look at consumers as being stupid and needing to be told what to get, then it's good. And so you run into some interesting scenarios here with the same thing here. It's, and that's those kinds of practices of protecting brick-and-mortar stores. The part that I find strange is that you're wanting... People want game lounges.
Yeah, right.
But they call them stores.
Yeah.
And there's a disconnect there that doesn't make sense to me. And that's where... There are now gaming lounges cropping up everywhere. And
game cafes.
I think that that's going to probably be the future of that industry.
New expansion for Netrunner came out today.
Yeah.
And this guy's like, no, there's none here. So, you know, call before you come in. And then everybody's like, oh, they're here. Oh, there's some over here. And he's like, I don't like to chase it. So I just ordered it online. And I'm like, why did you, like, I get why you posted, but.
But you said they weren't there?
Yeah. He's like, they're not at this certain shop, which is like Total Escape, which is over that way.
Sure.
They didn't get any. And so everyone's like, oh, come to this place, you know, support your local store, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I don't like to drive around. So I just got online. And I was like, there's like four or five shops in your area.
I don't understand those people who are like, I don't want to drive for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, she's just going to go.
No, I
don't worry.
She looked at me.
It's
fine. She's more important. Hi, everybody. This is the Sippin' Talkin'.
I'm Kyle Hagen.
I am Kendrick Evans.
And we're here today to talk to you about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Rice.
Jesus Rice?
Yeah. It's like Pizza the Hut, but, you know, not pizza.
How is Jesus Rice like Pizza the Hut?
Is there some kind of air conditioning we can get that might be turning on as far as, like, a fan?
Yeah. We can do that. It's 47 degrees outside, so it doesn't think you need to be cold right now.
I'm always hot.
Yeah, I got that. No, I got that. But it's like, I'm just explaining why it's not blowing chilled air at you is because currently it's 20 degrees colder than the coldest.
But what I really want to do is you know, take the air from outside and constantly blow it on me.
Yeah,
if only there were some type of thing I could roll down in order for me to get air without having to mess around with the recording.
Yeah, that's the hard part, because it'll fuck the recording up.
Oh, so yeah, that's actually a really big problem in the board game industry is, not in the industry, but like for distribution and sales is... keeping the brick and mortar alive, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's an interesting thing to talk about today a little bit.
Counterpoint, let them die.
Sure. I mean, that's fair.
I mean,
it's part, I guess there's two ways to look at it, right? The free market style approach would be if it can't survive on its own, it probably shouldn't, right?
I mean, yes, that's the principle.
And the other one is that there's actually, I mean, you probably have a straight up argument for this, but there's actually a lot of things that can't be not monetized, but quantified like that, like community building and things like that, where it's like future betting on community building, which has literally no money or anything associated with it, right?
I think the term that usually comes, I forget the term, but the concept that comes to mind here is that there are aspects of the choices people make that aren't obvious from the decisions that they make.
Transparency. There's a lack of that?
Well, it's that you don't realize that going to a store to play games, but buying your games online will lead to the store going away.
Yeah, like you there's like repercussions you don't understand of your actions.
But at the same time, this is a pretty obvious one. Like there's the far-reaching ones, which was like, what was one of there was I'm trying to think of some of the things that happened. Like, well, there's the ones like McDonald's had a some meal they were gonna make, some product, and they changed what they were originally gonna make from what the original like test kitchen made because they couldn't source enough of whatever the thing they needed was for every McDonald's without like farming that crop to destruction where no one else could get it.
Okay.
It was like, it wasn't like peanuts, but it's something like that, some nut or something, or berries or blueberries or some damn thing. I don't know what it was, but it was like, if we used this recipe with like raspberries or something or whatever this other berry was,
it'd be fine.
There aren't enough of that other berry
in
the country to satiate the demand that they would have. So they'd end up having to change it again anyway, and in doing so, completely consume the entire year's crop of raspberries. And so, like, that's sort of a consequence of making this choice, because the person making it's like, I like raspberries, and then, but that's like a far-reaching, that's not the best example. But,
no, it makes sense, though.
But there's something about, like, here's one.
Unforeseen consequences?
Ethanol. Ethanol's a great example of this one. Using ethanol for food, for automotive fuel, yeah, drove the price of corn up so high that it had a substantial impact on food costs.
I wouldn't doubt that.
So, no, like, because we also use corn syrup for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, by making ethanol a thing, it drove up the cost of corn.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And so it's one of those, like, oh shit, we didn't think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are some of the unintended consequences of some of these actions. And so that's an element of it. But I also think that there's a bit there where anytime you start having protectionism, I feel like you're missing an opportunity. That's usually my perspective. So it's not about the cold, hard
market. So how do you feel about... So there's different types of that idea of protectionism. So government intervention is a form, tariffs are a form, all this kind of stuff that you learn about.
Which are government intervention, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just wanted to be more specific. Yeah, sure. Like, government intervention comes in lots of forms, whether tariffs or, like, anything where you're blocking incoming exports or only making it so people can...
Manipulating the market is the simplest.
But if someone in the market makes a decision that's impacting everybody else, that's not necessarily outside of the free market structure.
What do you mean someone in the
market? So, like, what in order to combat this, what's happened is Asmodee is a big company inside the board gaming industry who's been buying smaller companies as in the world. So they're trying to give them the resources that they have in order to be able to make their companies larger because the little company has had successful games. They have implemented a policy where certain distributors will no longer get games because they're trying to create more of a community around the brick-and-mortar stores. So, like, if you do not have a brick-and-mortar store associated with your website that people can go into, they don't allow you to – they don't ship directly to you. You have to get them through a distributor, which is more expensive. So you can't sell them for those super undercut prices that are, like, $10 above stock price instead of, you know, what most stores sell for, which is 50% of
the buy price.
So they made a decision like that. And so to me, to me that means it's a little different than, like, someone else, an external body stepping in and trying to regulate. It's an internal decision amongst the people in that marketplace to do something that they feel is necessary.
I would say that that's completely unrelated from any kind of protectionism. I would say that that's a marketing choice on an intentional marketing choice on their end to make more money. Like, it is an intentional choice because then they can advertise that.
Yeah, and people, I think that, I agree with you. I'm not saying it, I didn't mean to imply it was. I was just saying
and I completely agree with you. I would say that that is definitely not a sort of protectionist or an interventionist attitude so much as it is someone choosing to deploy this market in a way, and they're being transparent about it. I mean, I'm assuming they have a reputation for this.
They're developing
a reputation.
Yeah, they are. They've put their foot down kind of there, and they're like, okay, we're not doing this anymore because we want to make sure that... Because what was happening for a long time is you'd see these, like, little websites pop up, and they would just have some outlet to, like, a non-distributor, and they would get a bunch of games and be able to sell them at cost or whatever, because they're
doing volume.
Yeah, and kind of like Mass Drop, if Mass Drop were really skeezy.
Or a lot of those places that do drop shipping, so they're working with the printing presses directly to just ship out. Yeah, so no, there's situations like that. I get it.
I think is interesting because
the interesting part about that is that your consumers are willing to do that. That's the part that's fascinating to me, is that the people who buy the games don't seem to care.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I agree with you, because sometimes you'll see these big long posts on Reddit about, you know, support your brick and mortars, and they're like, no, I don't want to, because I like going to play there, but I don't like paying their costs for games. And you're like,
and that's the element there where it's like, you, and this is the reason that I'm not going to admonish the company for trying to deploy this methodology. It will cost them some money somewhere.
Oh yeah,
but it may actually make them more money because of the reputation they'll gain.
And I think that's why they made their decision. You can still go to Amazon, but you can't get the stuff. Like, the games that I buy, you can't really get on Amazon very easily. So you have to go, like, order through a store. Or there are places that have internet sites, like,
have brick-and-mortar stores. But they're making the money in the brick. No, and that makes sense. That makes sense, too. I don't have a problem with that either. This all sounds like it's making sense. But my problem is that how much longer do you need... Are you going to push this fight? Actually, you know what? We can just do...
Oh, no, it was fine. I think we can
do button that just says, like, that.
Whoa. That. No, that's probably too loud.
There we go. There. Now you can just have air blowing at you.
No, I just moved it. I just wanted to move it.
Fine. I know, but I was like, now it'll actually blow it.
Oh, okay.
That's all I'm saying. But my whole point was that my biggest concern is that there are dead and dying business models out there, right? And defending them, for better or for worse... I mean, when you defend them, it may be a lost cause, it may be a charming thing, I don't know, but like, there are, I'm trying to think of another great example of a
I think like
a way of making.
The car industry's regulation was really weird, and like, yeah, the whole birth of the SUV is one of those examples.
Now, well, that's a great one. Well, here's one actually in the car industry. They're trying to push regulations to prevent Tesla from existing, and that you have to have an on-premise dealership, in like a physical dealership in the state to sell cars in that state.
That's okay.
Because they don't want Tesla, because you can buy a Tesla online, and they ship it to your house.
Okay, that's pretty sweet.
Traditionally, that's how they were doing it. And some places were trying to get around that because they don't want to have to compete with Tesla because they're shitty. And that's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You just make better cars. Well, they can't because the CAFE standards don't let them. So there's like a whole layers and layers of regulatory bullshit on there that make it harder for people to do
that. Wait, there's standards that don't let them make
Well, the standard, cars? Basically, here's the standard. Over the last 10 years, and I have to check more recently, but I know as the Cash for Clunkers was part of this, but there was a massive, started off bad and then got worse, decrease in people buying new cars. New cars were not selling for the MSRP or anything close. They weren't selling for what people wanted. They needed to keep lowering the prices because people wanted used cars. Mm-hmm. People were buying used cars at increasing rates over
because,
the years.
Well, part I bet part of that is because of how much your car value drops when you drive the dealership.
Which is true, but that's been true for a long time. So the increase in used cars...
I mean, just because it's been true for a long time doesn't mean people knew it for a
long
time.
No, but I mean, it's getting worse at a rate that's not people learning that cars devalue quickly. Like, that doesn't make sense. What it correlates to more closely is that efficiency standards and certain other standards are increasing. They're set to, they go up every year. Mm-hmm. Like, the efficiency requirements for engines goes up every year. It has to get higher and higher and higher. Well, when they do that, they have to re-engineer it each time, right? They have to figure out ways to do that. So they switch to aluminum engine blocks because they're lighter, but those have less power, and they're shitty. They have more ways to fall apart because they're not as sturdy. They switch to lighter, thinner bodies. And so people don't like that there's not steel bodies anymore. Although they're still often safe, they want steel-bodied cars. They want certain things. They want these characteristics, which they were finding in older cars, but they weren't finding in newer cars.
Okay.
And so as a result, you saw the cash for clunkers, which is where they took a whole bunch of used cars off the market to drive up the value of the remaining used cars, so that people would have to buy more new cars because the market was no longer favorable for used cars.
Mm-hmm.
Because the price difference and the valuation of the things was such that people weren't buying them. So you run into those sort of scenarios. Well, we destroyed thousands and thousands of functional automobiles in the cash for clunkers thing. And it was to manipulate the market. And it worked because then people started buying new cars more because it was because of supply and demand. Used cars simply weren't as available as they were. So you have to be like, okay, well, I'm not saving that much money anyway. Fine, I'll get the new one. But rather than address what people wanted or find a way to get people interested in them, they just eliminated what they wanted, which is good and bad. I mean, whatever. If you care about the consumer's interests, it's bad. But if you look at consumers as being stupid and needing to be told what to get, then it's good. And so you run into some interesting scenarios here with the same thing here. And those kinds of practices of protecting brick-and-mortar stores. The part that I find strange is that you're wanting... People want game lounges.
Yeah, right.
But they call them stores.
Yeah.
And there's a disconnect there that doesn't make sense to me. And that's where there are now gaming lounges cropping up everywhere. And
game cafes.
I think that's going to probably be the future of that industry.
Board, yeah.
Because those places sell stuff, right? Some of them sell games, but a lot of them sell food and drink, mm-hmm, and consumables.
And it's more about like playing the game from their library and less about buying it themselves.
Or bringing one and playing it, right?
And so the people who, and this is the interesting part too, is like, you get these people who don't have a game store next to them. It's almost like they bitch about, I'm sorry, and I say, I will openly say that I like supporting brick and mortar store,
sure,
because I like the communities that come out of them. And
right.
I get very emotionally attached to people saying that they hate brick and mortars and things like that, that overreact to it. If you don't go to it because of the reason I'm about to explain that makes sense. So you talk about how it's like this, it's the catch-22 cycle of death thing where there's not brick and mortar stores close enough to you, so you buy from Amazon or stores. So like, then one could never exist from you because if it did, you could never get the same cost that you would get from Amazon. So it's like,
these things are overpriced.
Yeah, and so like it's this weird thing where it's not weird. I'm sorry, it's this very logical thing where you're like, you could never have one next to you because you've already weeded it out by starting to buy online.
Yes.
And then the people that realize that are good. Like if you know that you're making the choice to not have a game shop near you, and you understand the repercussions of your actions, you know, that's all we can ever ask for in the world, me and you as individuals, is when you get talked to by us, just make sure you know, the things that are happening because of the choices you make. You can't get mad at somebody if they understand what they're
doing. Sure, if they understand the consequences, then they're not ignorant.
The other people that are like, well, there's no game store close enough to me, so I buy online, and you're like, you don't really think about what they're saying, or they're like not understanding exactly what it means to have a game store in your area where they will buy a game online and talk about how they have no one to play with, or talk about not playing a game because there's no one to play with, but not buying online. But buying online, it's like these weird things come out of these conversations, and you're like, you see these. Anytime you get on the internet, you see comments, you see cycles, but it's interesting.
The thing that gets me is the conflation of a place to play games and a place to buy games.
Yeah.
Those don't have to be the same thing, which is why I say the business model might need to change, because you're assuming that the only way you can have a local place to play games...
Me personally?
The way you're talking is if the people who choose not to buy stuff locally don't want a place to play games locally, and it's clear that that's not the case. It's just that they don't support that business model, which you can either yell at them and tell them to change their practices to conform to yours, which is functional and works to some extent, especially if you have power over them in some way. You're the only sole distributor that sells those games.
Yeah.
But the other way is to be reactive to the interests and needs of the market and say, well, these consumers don't want to buy from brick-and-mortar stores anymore. It's changed. The customers have changed. So what can we offer them to make a business model that makes sense? It's not about, raking people over the coals to make money, but it's about keeping the doors open, right? A business that's profitable is a business that can grow, and if a business can grow, then it can more better accommodate the needs of the people that are using it, right?
Sure.
So,
and there's another factor here we haven't even started talking about yet, which I find very interesting, is we're just talking, I'm specifically talking about the experience I've seen with brick-and-mortar board game store specifically. Yeah. So anytime you bring Magic the Gathering into the picture for a hobby game shop, you don't have to worry about anything ever again. Because having a shop next to you that will buy cards from you instead of having to do it online is something that's exponentially more valuable.
Because you always need them now.
Yeah, because you always want to be able to trade cards in and get them at the moment you need them.
And part of that is a little thing where there's so many of them. Shipping costs are stupid for what you get. Mm-hmm. There's no way you're going to get them fast enough for what you need.
Yep.
And you want to sell them as much as you want to buy them.
Yeah, you need to be, and especially when you're in the standard. Yeah, because what you're saying is, or what you're alluding to in my mind, is the idea of there's this formats associated with Magic. And the formats associated with Magic are ones that, or one of them, is one that is incredibly reactive. So, or incredibly quick to change.
Liquid,
yeah.
It's a very liquid asset.
That's a very good way to say it. So, a card that's good in standard Magic is something that you need to be able to quickly get rid of and obtain in any given moment.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of cool at the same time, is that's why a lot of people like me kind of think of it as a necessary evil, because it's not really bad that Magic is as popular as it is, but it's also it keeps other people from trying other games.
I feel like what that does for the Magic is that it kind of excludes Magic houses from this conversation completely, because they're not really under threat.
I've never found a single shop that has only done Magic and nothing else.
I know one, but...
Which one?
Black Gold, isn't it?
Yeah, he sells board games, too. We've bought board games from him before.
Oh.
Yeah, so, that's what I mean. It's, you usually... The same distributors get comics.
I've never seen it.
The same distributors... Well, Amy got all of her Arkham Horror stuff there.
Mike's place.
Shout out to Black and Gold if you haven't been there.
Yeah, go check them out. Mike's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. And they actually have lots of stuff, so, feel free to...
I never go. Call. I've been there in years, but it's cool.
But yeah, so, you get those from the same distributors.
Did you ever expand to that next door place?
I don't know. Actually, I didn't go down there. It's down next to Amy's family's house. Oh,
okay. Go see Amy's family, too.
Amy's family. Cool. Sorry, Amy. What I mean is that it's really... if you do sell Magic, it's really easy to get all that stuff because it's all the same distributors. So the people who you buy Magic from are the same people you would order all of the board games and stuff from, and all the sleeves and all that stuff. So it's easy for them to hop on if someone's like, oh, I want a game, and you're like, oh, this game seems popular right now, I can buy this. So
true.
There's that. And I have seen, though, places that don't do Magic that do everything else. They're like a 40K board game place, and they don't really last that long. And so... to your point, is because
what's the market want?
Yeah, it's not really that. It's not really that they wanted a place to buy games from. They just wanted to play games.
And that's places. Where I think things like Gaming Lounge or like comic book stores that have gaming tables in the back. Communities can build up out of those.
It's the same idea. Comic book store slash magic is a place that you can go that's self-sustaining.
Sure.
That can sell other things.
Then there are other places like that Gaming Lounge down in...
Board Game Republic.
Yeah, Board Game Republic. I've never been there. There's the one down off of Wadsworth and Hamden. It's changed its names a couple times. It's something Tournament Hall or something. Whatever.
I've heard of that.
Dungeons and Drafts.
Dungeons and Drafts.
Is it Lair of Abraxas that too?
Lair of Abraxas, yeah.
Yeah. And so those are all places where they don't... I mean, they... I'd love to see their books, because I guarantee you they're not making the majority of their money on board game sales.
They don't... Actually, most of those places don't sell board
games. Yeah, why bother? Stock. Unnecessary stock.
No,
right?
It's because those are the places that are refusing to participate in the game with most hobby shops and choosing to do this new model of cafe.
And I think that all of them appear to be profitable, or at least are busy. I've only ever been to one, but I'm familiar with them and I've heard of them, and people have nothing but good things to say about them. And they appear to still be running, right?
Sure.
So Dungeons & Drafts has a whole theme going where it's fucking super themed as...
It's pretty awesome.
As like a fucking tavern thing, and their food was so rich and so good. Like, it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside there is it was a little expensive. However, I don't think they'd chase you out you just had it... Well, I mean, I wouldn't go there every day.
Okay.
I couldn't go there every day, right? But I wouldn't go there to hang out indefinitely. However, they did have some inexpensive things on the menu. And they did have... I felt like there was an air of not chasing people out just because they were done eating or because they hadn't ordered something expensive.
Well, yeah,
or
you'd never be able to run a gaming open table place like that.
Right. And so there's an interesting aspect there because if you're doing restaurants, it's all about turnover. You need to clear the tables as fast as possible to get more restaurants in there, right?
The Lair of Abraxas idea is an extension of the fridge full of goodies at a game shop thing, right? Where... You're not running a restaurant. You just have a kitchen.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird backwards way, right?
But that's where the thing is. You can also economize certain things in that environment and make it profitable without chasing people out, too. And I think there's an element there of... especially if you have an element of... Like, if you have good enough food, you'll have enough people just coming to eat and leave... that you can afford to carry a couple of big tables that don't really get used very well. Like the banquet tables at a lot of places. They can't use that very often because they don't have a lot of banquet. But now it's just gamers using them. So the space is still used.
Is that something you've seen? Or is that
if you go to any chain restaurant or whatever, they usually have a back room or they have a banquet hall or something like a
party room.
Yeah, or a party room. And that's not full every day, of every minute of every day. Not compared to their main tables, right? Mm-hmm. So
you're saying like restaurants could get involved in this because they.
The restaurant model is probably surprisingly mappable to this environment.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ, dude.
He's got a.
Yeah, no, he's got a big fucking truck. I got that. I don't know why he's driving at like 12 miles per hour down the middle of the road, but. He needs a tow truck for his tow truck. And then the guy Jeep behind me decided to stick it to me, so that was cute.
You gotta love those people who are like, no, you need to get out of the way, but like they do it before you because they're better than you.
And you're like, oh, you're stuck. Fuck you. Yep, I know.
It's your fault.
But I think that certain restaurant models, and here the problem is, you need high enough markup and low enough overhead to make it work because you basically are wasting space. With restaurants, it's all about using the space you have, maximizing the number of tables, right? Because any extra entrees you could be selling that you're not selling. At any given minute, is you not making money, right? So if you have a bunch of room that you're not utilizing, then it's a waste of space. Now, the worst part is he comes right past me, right? Like, how you got up to speed? But anywho,
eventually.
The aspect of being able to float some space, if you have a big enough area with enough low enough rent, you can probably afford to keep, that's effectively, a back room empty. And if you have that back room being interspersed throughout, you can have those big tables that maybe have slow cycles. You don't have good turnaround on them. But those people are going to stay there, and maybe they'll keep eating and drinking. I don't know. Like, I think that you could probably build out a menu and build out a concept of what you'd want this to do not waste
them
and actually make money.
Look at the menus of these places. Like, you don't go to a board game cafe and see menus like you would see at, like, a Chili's. And I say that in the sense of... like, it's not a steak. Like, you see steak at Chili's. You see these, you see meals, like,
right,
actual things that you require, like, yeah, a legitimate grill to cook and things like that. You see, I mean, it wasn't bad at Dragons and Draft House. It was fantastic.
I said they had steak and everything there, too, but yeah.
They did not have steak on there. They did not have a steakhouse meal on
the Dragons and Draft. You didn't have a steak there?
No. That's the whole point. Is they had gimmicky cook stuff where, like, they had one pot stuff, like the mac and cheese.
Yeah.
They put it in a little oven they have, and then it's done, right? They have sliders, which are, like, little sandwiches you can make on a really small grill. I'm saying, like, you probably don't invest in having a full-on restaurant if you're running, a board game place. But you're right. It does fit in with, like, a whole idea.
Well, I mean, you've also got the cafe standard. I think Dungeons & Drafts is more a little more than the cafe, to be honest. I think it's a little far down the line of being a restaurant. But, like, that's worked for them there. But other places, I think, can get away with being more of a cafe.
Yeah.
Doing coffee drinks and doing that kind of stuff. And
like, Board Game Republic only has, like, paninis and cold sandwiches.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. It's just what they can afford to make in their kitchen. Right.
And it keeps your overhead low because your spoilage is low because all the ingredients are cheap. And mm-hmm. So you got lots of reasons for that, right? Like, if you're doing filet mignon and you're doing whatever, like, you're going to have spoilage costs that make the whole thing such that your markup has to be so high, blah, 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 blah. That's economics. That's how it works. But mm-hmm. In the concept of these places, I think that if you made a menu that wasn't necessarily that it's elaborate or whatever, but that you thought to yourself, what are my patrons actually want?
Yeah.
And if it's things like you can get a bowl of popcorn, fresh popcorn, you know, big old bowl for a dollar or whatever, and even if it's crazy market, $4, $2, like whatever it is, and popcorn's cheap, but man, people like popcorn, like, to munch on when they're playing games. So you just get a bowl of popcorn, right? Like, if you just ding people per bowl of popcorn, they're going to sit there and keep eating popcorn and not mind. They're not going to mind that they get dinged for it. You know, they're not going to mind that, whatever. If the deal is you sit there and you just break in your dollars and worth of popcorn all day, it's cheap, it's easy to make because you just, you know, you have a popcorn popper and you're done. The cleaning up after it's easy, like it those sorts of things.
Have you ever cleaned a popcorn before?
No, I mean cleaning the bowls and stuff. Right. And what I'm thinking is things like French fries. You know, make things that people are gonna want to eat over long periods of time. You know,
You don't make cold appetizers, a single course meal a lot because you make things that are not big enough to technically fill people up, but are easy to eat over time. Yeah,
and then as a result, you build it, and then here's your next level thing. Build a cell phone based ordering system to cut down on your wait staff.
Yep,
so maybe you only have one person working. Like, you could theoretically have a cook and a front desk person, and maybe that's it.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you like do away with the entire concept of tables being allocated. You just let people sit wherever the fuck they want, and you give them a cell phone app that you develop or you find or you use or whatever.
Or like you could even like one time investment opening thing have like something at the tables, like sure. They do at Chili's, like those like little things that you can order from.
But I mean, even if you just say use your cell phone, because these are all nerds, they all have fucking cell phones, right?
Yeah.
So like, and just here, just floating a business idea here, you could theoretically have a cell phone website, you know, just a mobile website. Mm-hmm. You have an online ordering system. You already, you know, maybe you got to pay for that, but you have an online order system, right? And you do microtransactions basically. You're like, oh, I want to have a fries. Boom, paid for, done. And then you. I don't know. You have a little light up thing that vibrates and tells you when it's done. Or
I was thinking that too. Like
you just have a number.
You just have a window, and they're like order 7. Like,
yeah. And you go get it. Yeah. Boom. Now you eliminated your front office staff. Yeah. Now you just need clean people.
That's actually exactly what they do at that Dark Horse place we're talking about. And it's not a board game cafe, but they have a bar. And they have a food as well. But you have to go up to the window to order it.
Yeah.
And you have to pick it up from the window.
But think about how easy it is if you're not even taking orders.
No, I get it. I'm not just saying like the same delivery method.
That's what I'm saying though. Is you can cut down on a whole lot of stuff because now you only have cooks.
Yep.
And maybe you have one person floating around, make sure, you know, helping people with board games or whatever. But a lot of times you can get people from the community to help you and then, you know, give them free stuff or something to pay them. Like what you would do at the fucking game store, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think that there's a lot of angles for new business models here without getting stuck on the old ones.
No, I don't disagree with you. I just find it, I find the community that I get out of a brick and mortar store to be valuable. And if people don't like that, that's their decision.
Well, do you think that a place like what I just said would develop a community or not?
Maybe, yeah. I think it has the potential to. I think it depends on how much it markets itself as a restaurant.
And I think you'd have to market it as a gaming lounge.
Like, yeah, and like Dungeons & Draft Us. Because
exactly.
I think that that is somewhere where you have communities develop because of that reason you said, that single thing you said earlier. They don't try to push you out. Like,
yeah.
They want you to stay, which is the... almost the exact, you've already said all this stuff in so many words, but the exact opposite of what a real restaurant yep. would want you to do. Like, they want you to get in and get out. And
that's again where if this might just be the thing, is someone needs to think about this more often. Like, what do people want? Like, you order, is like, I want a big basket of fries right now. You boop, and there's a guy pops up.
Yeah,
like,
okay, the easier here's you can fries. Facilitate people's whims is yeah. the easier.
And that's what I mean. Like,
money.
That might be enough just to not have to flag down a waitress. Mm-hmm. Just to be able to pull up your phone and be, you know, going through here and be like, oh, I'll buy that. And then, like, don't worry about settling the tab. Just buy it right now. Boom. I'm going to buy it, guys. I got a round of fries, everybody. Oh, I put in for some sliders.
You know what
would be
genius there, though, is you have a board game library, right? It's yep. got one copy of every game. Mm-hmm. And if they want to play it, like, you can give them a discount on ordering it at the shop and have extra copies of the games you have in your library.
Yeah.
So it's as easy as that. And French fries, oh, man, they already have Ticket to Ride rented out. Let's buy it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, maybe it's like 35% off when you buy it at the shop if there's no copy in the library.
Sure.
So you now have sold a game.
Yep.
And they can either keep it or do whatever they want with it. You know, it's their fucking game.
Yep.
They can give it away to their friends.
And there you go. Now you may have one other person who's mining the front there, but then you if you're willing to maintain stock, you got a purpose there. And you don't give a shit if someone brings in their own game mm-hmm. or if they borrow one of yours.
You're just
you
trying
maintain
to facilitate,
complete
yeah.
agnostic behavior. Like, fuck it.
And
you
then
want this.
Stuff on the shelf doesn't have to be as a lot of the I never really understood this mentality, and I get it. I get it, but I don't like it just because I don't see it the same way. But the whole idea of something sitting on the shelf is useless.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not giving you money, and I'm like, yeah, that's fair. Like, it's not giving you money right now, but...
I mean, stock, like...
Yeah, like that, it was a big thing in the manufacturing industry, like, ordering exactly what you need all the time.
Right.
And, like, it caused a lot of problems, was all I saw, where, like, we would always be under-ordered on stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you're going to do that, do it right.
You got to have
or don't do it at all.
Precise things. Yeah.
Like, you need to predict precisely what
a
you need.
A lot of those things are based off of, well, when you're ordering stuff, it's based off of budgetary stuff, mostly.
Yep,
usually,
you know,
it's like, oh, I don't want to spend the money on that. When it's retail space, when you're retail, the name of the game in retail is anything I'm holding on to that's not selling is wasting space,
yep.
and space is money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, again, these are all things that are tenets of building those types of businesses. If your business is not as concerned with these things, because there's
exactly.
other avenues.
I was just
going to
say that, which is cool, because now you're combining two things that already work and making the pressure for the North Mole things
yep.
that go into those businesses
yep.
less
And
impactful.
I think just even having stuff like soft drinks marked up can make you enough to make it go. And so
it's the same reason people still buy concessions at the movie theater.
Which I always do, yeah.
don't get money off of the films.
Right.
So if you understand that, even if you don't understand that. Like,
well, that's why they're so enticing. That's why they push you to do it.
Yeah, and that's why they give you such big portions. It's easy for them to, like, you know,
just give
make
you
something
popcorn.
Bigger for $5, and now they've made, like, you know, 500% profit off of, like, the
right.
75 ounces of soda you
yeah.
got.
Yeah, adding a quarter of a penny of soda and then charging you $2 more
mm-hmm.
was a great deal for everybody. but the thing that I really... We're probably way over time here, but the thing that I really get is... That I like is... I want to see...
32 minutes.
I made a pretty good time home. It's the Snowmageddon end of days.
I feel like we should open this place up because based off of what we know now, you have the tech stuff to help us at least set it up if you don't want to be involved.
Yeah.
I have the board game knowledge to probably be
able to find
a
restaurant manager.
And yeah, restaurant manager and maybe
a
chef.
But I mean, that's kind of the concept, I think, is that if you are very mindful and build it right, you could have some cool ideas here. And I think that's the reason that I'm not as concerned about brick and mortar stores closing, because the need for the community is there, but people don't understand how to push that market. Because it's a market.
I have a counterpoint for you that I find emotional, so you're not going to like it. So the same reason that you are having trouble getting out of your school is the same reason I would be sad if Collector Mania closed because it wasn't...
And I appreciate that. But what I'm saying is that...
if they don't adapt, that's their fault. I get that.
Yeah, but I think that there's some neat new ideas that are coming out of this, and I'd like to see some of those attempted.
Sure.
And that's kind of what I'd like to see more of than...
The switch for an older shop is hard. So
oh, yeah,
if you're not opening up a new place, it's very difficult from what I've seen, it's very difficult for a shop that's already running and has like a very tight budget mm-hmm. and it's already in its motions to try to be like, yeah, let's just like, you know, basically change everything we do, right?
Right.
Especially since Magic is such a big thing. Like,
yeah.
Magic being in a shop almost, and in my mind at the moment, and I'd love to hear what people have to say, maybe not you because we're about to stop, but...
Yeah.
And we could talk forever for this.
Obviously.
Do you think that having Magic at a shop almost excludes it from being able to run in this cafe model? Because of the way that the tournament structures and the activity in the shop and the things like that works.
I would say because of the fact that every I know we've talked about this, but magic is a different animal.
Oh, yeah. Than
this. It's just a different
animal. But they're almost intrinsically linked in they most look, places
They look
now.
Very similar, but
in most places
a serious magic shop is a different kind of thing, just because you're expected to use the whole space sometimes.
Yep.
And it's possible. You could close it for a private event, whatever. One other idea is, what do you think people would approach? How do you think people would feel about a membership fee?
Actually, a lot of places just do cover charges on the bill.
You just pay to
You
come
pay
in.
$5 to use the game library. Each person pays a cover charge when they
walk in.
Like, not when they walk in. Like, they get charged a cover. Yeah, so it doesn't matter. They get charged a cover charge whenever. Before they leave, when they walk in. And that's it. That's it. That's all you do.
Well, that makes you good money right there.
I right?
Because there's a culture of that already. Then.
$5. I mean, I'm surprised 1UP doesn't do that. Yeah. If they did that instead of making people pay for the games, I bet they would make a ton more money. Because there's a place in Florida called Player One that we went to, and they basically just did a $5 cover charge.
This place over here does that too.
Yeah, and it's really easy to do, and this place had like arcades and ROMs and everything like that, and pinball, and it made it so you didn't have to worry about what you were spending.
Yeah, yeah.
You could just pay the $5 and go in.
What's that place called over here?
It's not
Hyperspace.
Hyperspace?
Hyperspace.
I've never been there.
Yeah, it's right on the other side of Casa Bonita.
Oh, cool.
Like, right behind Casa Bonita.
But, yeah, so...
And they have, like, 1,000 and some odd arcade cabinets.
Wow,
it's fucking insane.
Oh, I have to go there.
Yeah,
I want to go there.
You pay, like, $12 to get in.
See, I would do that.
And that's then you just play until you're bored, and then you leave. And they don't serve any food, though.
There's a whole other aspect of this maybe we need to talk about another time, but it's the entertainment value of games and how expensive things are. So people balk at paying $60 for a game, when in reality, that's how much you'd sit... do a four-player... like, a four-person movie nowadays.
Yeah, no, it's... I think it's... That's valid. I think that... You need to be, when you're building any of these businesses, you need to be mindful of what the actual costs are, because people will bitch about it, but still go.
But yeah, and so consumers, I think, have a little bit of like their own work that they need to do when they talk about stuff is understanding experiences.
I think that
and that's not what I'm asking them to do. I just think there's something to do there.
Yeah, there's an issue there. I think the other part you have to watch out for is that people will say one thing and then behave differently.
Oh yeah, I do that.
And that's
all the time.
Very, very common with consumers and this kind of stuff. Like, those people are like, I would buy from a local game store, but there's none near me. Okay, but you wouldn't.
Yeah, but like even if
I know you
wouldn't, you wouldn't.
Yeah, because you don't want to pay that much.
All right, well, thanks for listening to us rant today, everybody.
Yeah, I guess I don't know what we're going to do with that, but there you go, everybody.
Yeah, that was an interesting
business episode. Models and games and I don't even know.
Have fun, peeps. Have a good
come
life.
Find our store.
Yeah, come find our store.